Ah, 2025, the year of Sinners, and presumably a few other movies that we'll recap right now on a special year-end edition of the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two mailroom employees just trying to get through the day. It's Camila Adams.
God, this clock is so slow.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Work is my favorite.
That's nice. Elf, last time I didn't double check. We liked it okay. Yeah. It was right in that
67 range.
Yeah, it was right about there.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we dropped it late enough in the holiday cycle that no one was angry at me.
I think so you got no backlash?
I think people probably listened to it and went, oh, I'm gonna, and then had Christmas business.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. There wasn't a lot of time to just like let all of the other anger and rage bubble over into that.
It certainly did not crack the highest rated Nomias of the year. That we have done another year of evaluating former box office champions, we can tell you our favorites this year. Our fifth favorite was the first thing we did this year, Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Good movie.
And I didn't remember loving it, but we did.
Yeah. I guess so. I don't remember that.
Gave it an 80. Next, Scream 2, 83 and a third.
That makes sense.
I feel like in this room it would have been higher. We were probably paying too much attention to the actual flaws in the movie and not enough to how much we love it.
Yeah, what was the rating?
83 and a third.
Yeah. I don't know. Scream 2, yeah.
I'd watch it right now.
Yeah same.
Exactly.
Ghostbusters at 89 and two thirds. Runner-up for the year, Titanic, 91 and two-thirds. Just behind, The Birdcage. Pretty Yay. Much a perfect movie.
Yeah.
92 and a third. That's very high on our list overall, and this was a better year. I listened back to this episode from last year, and we didn't like anything in 2024.
Well, it was also just grim.
There was a cloud over 2024. We were still learning how to rehuman.
Yes, it's not like 2025 has been a walk in the park. just to be clear,
we're just accustomed to that cloud.
Yes,
right,
and adjust for it. We grade on a curve, which we did not do for our lowest ranked movie this year. CC and Company, 7 1/3.
A real movie that exists,
right? Yeah.
But also, okay, I read the book Oscar Wars this year, and CC and Company is mentioned in that book.
How so?
Why? Because of Anne Margaret. Yeah.
She's a star.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Viva Las Vegas. Don't watch CC and Company. We're here to give you our favorite movies of the year and do some other stuff. It's if you're hearing this, the holiday season is over.
Yes.
But you're in that January period where you want to sit at home and not go anywhere.
Exactly.
And we're here to tell you which movies to watch.
When you do that, while you sit and couch rot.
Yeah.
And hopefully don't use up all your PTO already.
Right.
January.
It can be very, very tempting. Who wants to give a top five first?
I'll go.
It's not a punishment, but go ahead.
I know, but it's vulnerable.
Right.
It is. But I also kind of feel like none of this will be coming as any surprise to anybody. and I guess I have an order this year.
Mm. Oh, good for you.
We'll stop for the bottom up. Number five, Rental Family.
So sweet. I'm so glad that movie exists just for you.
I know. Like I'm already just, I'm getting choked up now. Like there's nothing amazing about the script in itself. I don't know if I would feel the same way if the lead was not played by Brendan Fraser. Like he has this certain vulnerability to him right now and this innocence that is just overwhelming every time he's on screen. I just want to cry. But this is the sweetest fucking movie and it is a great story and I highly recommend. I don't know if it's rentable yet, but
it will be soon.
Yeah, but yeah, I very much recommend this one.
How did he go from
hunky heartthrob
semi-rugged action star to, you're a pillow that's also a puppy.
You know?
He was always a puppy.
He was always a puppy, yes. Right. He was just a rock hard puppy for a while in the beginning. And I think Hollywood was leaning very heavily on his physicality early on, which is fine by me. Like, I was totally here to objectify him those first, like, 10 years or whatever in Hollywood, maybe. And I don't know if this has to do, he has the softest, kindest eyes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if my extra towards him has something to do with now knowing, like, he had his hiatus from Hollywood and now knowing why he had that hiatus, and just, and I just seeing him in these interviews now where he's always verklempt by everybody, just by everybody's love on him. So he just seems like just the sweetest, kindest person. And I wish for good, nothing but good things for Brendan Fraser from here on out.
Same.
Number four, The Ballad of a Small Player. I was going back and forth on that one for a while. And I think it mostly hinges upon Colin Farrell's performance and just like how fucking unhinged it is.
He was good. The movie left me cold, but he was good.
Yeah, like he was really good. And it was a beautiful movie also.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, I love, like, the hyperactive color palette is insane. And that really got to me.
I have those lights behind my TV that like light up. The Hue Sync lights, so like they light up in the colors that are on the screen. Oh, and that was one of the best Hue Sync light movies I've ever
seen. I'll bet.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, so, again, like the story in itself is not, the script has a couple plot holes. It tries to do a little bit too much with the time that they have. But Colin Farrell was amazing. And he's another one of those, like, I'm happy for him and the choices that he is making now. For his film roles.
He won an Oscar, right?
Nope. He's only been nominated one time.
What was he nominated for?
For Inish Banshees? Why do I picture him winning? Did he win the Globe?
He won a Golden Globe.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah, and he used some of his speech to be like, Ana de Armas, you're very good in Blonde.
That's objectively not true.
I know.
I feel that's on brand.
Yeah.
Number three, The Long Walk. I just finally saw that the other day.
I haven't seen it yet.
Jesus.
Probably never will. Let's be real.
It's crazy. It's rough. And I really, what was that guy's name? The friend, not the main kid, but his main friend.
David Johnson, something like that. Jansen.
Maybe.
That's a local news anchor. The actor or the guy?
The actor.
David. Oh, it is David Johnson. It's just spelled weird.
It's like eight
J-O-N-S-S-O-N.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's got to be Johnson, right?
It's got to be.
Okay. Could be Johnson.
Johnson.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, he's great. I think
he's really good.
Fucking amazing.
He was in Rye Lane, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And it took me like forever. I was like, this guy looks familiar. I don't know why I know him. I looked up like his, you know, whatever like the x-ray thing was. And it's like, nope, I haven't seen any of those things. And then later on, I was like looking at my past top five and it was Rye Lane was in there. And I was like, fuck yeah, that's who it is.
Yes.
So not only is he fucking hilarious and like can do a romantic lead, but he's also just like very captivating and great in this dramatic, thrilling role. And Jesus God, like this movie really just, it really gets to you. And yeah, that was another one that left me in tears.
I read that book when I was about 16 and loved it and thought, oh, this would be the best movie ever. Why has it, of all of the Stephen King stories and books that have been adapted, why hasn't, not acknowledging that there might not have been a big appetite for 39, 40, however many it is, kids getting shot in the head as a movie, but then we had the Hunger Games to break the seal on that concept.
Right. And they were like, I guess this can work.
Yeah. And so it can't possibly have lived up to the 20 years I was waiting for it to come into the world, but I still, I liked it a lot, especially the cast. The cast is stacked.
It was a really great cast. It also made me question again, like what do we think that Stephen King's childhood was like? Either he had a really great group of friends that he, you know, a good circle of friends, or he was the outsider that like really hated the kids who had a good group of friends, because there's a theme in all of his, in most of his stuff.
There's a lot of groups of friends and there's a lot of mean parents and mean authority figures. I mean, I'm sure this information exists in the world.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
But I'll bet he was not that great with his family and relied on
Buddies. I haven't read any Stephen King, but I've seen enough of his adaptations and stuff to like just that was the first thing I was like, what is this like that came that was thinking that because everybody is always children in peril. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then but you know, you also kind of get pulled out a little bit, like the whole pooping subplot.
Hey. Like, what?
Like they got to keep walking.
It deals with the fact that you have to poop on the move.
Right. Okay, that's all right. It's I don't think I'm going to see that one.
Number two, him.
Oh. Really?
I know so many people did not like this movie, but Marlon Wayans and I think what's really what I'm catching here is it's my top five has to do with certain with specific standout performances in each one. That's what the theme I'm getting here. Him. I thought it was a really well done thing. I kind of wish that I would have been more interested to see how Jordan Peele would have gone about directing it as opposed to just producing. But Marlon Wayans was amazing. And I, again, with like the hyperactive visuals in this, I think it was spot on with just kind of giving this outsider look to the sports phenomenon and culture and the all that. Anyway, how I was already feeling. Thanks for putting it on film for me. And number one, what?
No, I just another good cast. I wish it would have gotten a little bit more attention.
Yeah.
And wonder if it didn't get as much attention as it should have because people don't want a movie about how football is bad.
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with it. I think just most, because everybody, no matter what, like this is, no matter, today I saw yet another, and it's not funny, but I saw another NBA sports guy was accused of domestic violence of some sort. Yeah, and it's like,
it was a football. Yeah, it was a, I forget his name, plays football for the Patriots.
Yeah. And it's just like, at this point, it's like, maybe we just, Let's. It's not a news story anymore. Like, give me the news story about the guy who has a loving family, who treats his people with respect, and who's not like doing drugs and stealing shit, and you know, and living this whatever this fucking lifestyle is that they seem to believe. And what's also like really a kick in the face is that so many cities want to use like Stop the Violence funds, I want to say, and put it towards sports ball in kids' schools as a way to stop the violence to keep the kids off the street. But I feel like this cycle is not, that's not it. This isn't that. And we should be putting that money elsewhere.
Well, particularly, dedication to sports can give young people some purpose and some direction.
Yes.
But some sports are violent.
Yes.
Football is violent. Hockey is violent.
Yeah.
You know. It's. I feel like you wouldn't put those funds and be like, we're training them for mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
But is there that much difference
not
with
really,
football?
Right. No, not really. Like, I think, we're always really pushing those specific ones in, to the inner city youth. And never, I rarely see anything like, let's go play tennis.
Yeah.
Or let's learn, you know, skateboarding. Or, you know, but that's another podcast.
Yeah.
Number one.
Number one.
Obviously, Sinners.
Yeah. Sure.
Sinners. I don't have anything else to say about it. I've been talking about it all year.
I still haven't gotten Mary Beth to sit down and watch it.
Really?
And I feel like, do I not now? Because I've been like, you have an obligation to see the best movie of the year and one of the most important movies of our time. Like how's that going to go?
Right. If she was going to see it, I feel like she would have seen it.
Right. No, it's... It speaks for itself, you know? I mean, even in my, spoilers, when I was writing my top 10 story, I was like, what do I say about Sinners? It's like, it feels like you're talking about Jaws or The Godfather.
Right, yeah.
You know, like...
Well, I think that is what you say. I think that, like, my take on Sinners and spoilers, I have it ranked shockingly low.
Oh, my God.
I know.
What else did you see?
But what I... was thinking is like, this is the movie from this year that people will be watching in 50 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like without a doubt. So that's meaningful. Right. That's a really important sign of a great film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Recap it.
Rental Family, The Ballad of a Small Player, The Long Walk, Him and Sinners. Oh, and I would like to throw out which honorable mention because I thought that it was this year. But it was released in 24. I saw it this year. Strange Darling.
I don't think I know what that is.
What is that kid's name? It is a crazy pants psychological thriller horror movie starring Kyle Gallner.
Oh, he's great.
And Willa Fitzgerald are the two main characters. And it's broken up in chunks and four or five chapters, I believe. And the chapters are told out of order.
Oh.
So like we start with four and then we come back to one and then we go to five. And it's a very well done. Like you see a lot. It's nothing new, but this is the best that I've ever seen it done in a movie. And I'm not going to say too much more about it because it will spoil it. But other than that, you just got to watch it.
Cool.
You want to punch some movies?
You know what movie I'm going
to
punch.
Let's, this was Robin's suggestion maybe last year, in addition to our favorite movies of the year, and not our least favorite movies, because something can just be boring and unremarkable and be at the bottom of your list. What movie do you want to punch? If you only got to punch one movie, let's go around the room. Camila, you're on a roll.
One battle after another.
I will catch it as it falls.
I think it was the last episode. I went on.
It
my
was
tirade.
It was our the way we were episode.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
I went on my tirade. Then the misogyny and the racism is too much, and it to me it overshadows anything that could have been good about the movie.
Yeah,
you've made that point about a number of things, including Sacred Cows. I mean, listen to our Blazing Saddles episode if you want. You know,
one of our best episodes.
Yeah, Sacred Cows.
You know, movies that are held up as a classic.
Yeah,
and,
gotcha.
You know,
it's like I never.
What are you talking about?
What movie is that? No, you've made this point that a lot of white male filmmakers get a pass on throwing a lot of racism and misogyny in their movies if like the message is correct. And you make a point that I haven't heard a lot of people making. That's like you could also just not throw all of that racism and misogyny.
Right.
It's the Tarantino. Dead blank in the car speech in Pulp Fiction. Like that, Pulp Fiction would still be Pulp Fiction without that or with different language.
It would be
language.
Even better.
Exactly. And then he also, like, and in that Pulp Fiction, like, I feel like he tries to give that character a pass too. Tarantino, when he's married to a black woman, this character, but we never see her. But also, Sinners.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with racism.
Very much so.
Very much. Mm-hmm. But, like, had Tarantino done it, we would have seen that story that Delroy Lindo tells. That would have been all over. That would have been visual, but we didn't need that visual for that to make it to hit as hard as it did. And Coogler showed us that we can do that. You can tell the story without being a fucking asshole about it.
Mm-hmm. Robin, what will you be punching this year?
You know, this was surprisingly difficult for me because like most of the movies that made me want to punch them while I was watching, other people really like. And obviously I really like One Battle and you're very right to punch it. But like, I kind of want to punch Eddington and I kind of want to punch Begonia. But like some people out there are like brilliant. And people who love Eddington love to say that if you don't like Eddington, you have media illiteracy. And so I'm like, maybe I do.
No, like I was left kind of on Eddington. Like I recognized that Joaquin, it was fine.
There are things in it that I liked.
Yeah.
I set Eddington aside because I was sure you'd be punching it.
Oh, okay.
I thought it would go punched.
But I feel like, I don't know, like from recalling some of the tirade you had gone on, like Begonia feels like the one that viscerally is the one that you want to punch.
The other thing about Begonia is that it has erased itself from my brain. Like, I truly am like, well, that was dumb.
You're like, get out.
Yep. So I can't even stay mad at it, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. You forgot. That's the abuser cycle.
I will say that, like, when it pops up on Best Picture nominee lists, I go, what? Yeah. But, yeah, I'm not going to punch it. I think that at the end of the day, I just got to punch Tron Ares because that could have been a good movie if they had just not put Jared Leto in it and written it a few more times.
Right.
Like it needed some rewrites, but like the style of that movie was so that could have been a really great time at the movies.
Yeah.
That could have been a speed racer experience if only the movie didn't suck. So I've got to punch it for
Jared Leto.
Yeah, I'm going to punch specifically Jared Leto.
Well, they take themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
Like, the original even kind of does, and it's a cheesy 80s. I haven't seen the middle one, but they take themselves so seriously.
I would argue that takes itself the least seriously.
The least of the series, yeah. But still pretty seriously. Yeah. It's like, can we have fun with the glowing things and the discuses that kill people? Like, can you have a good time?
It's like, we're not doing Citizen Kane here, guys. Yeah. Let's just, you're in front of a green screen. Let's just fucking relax.
Tron Ares was on my list of things that are lucky not to get punched by me, as was Megan 2.0. You missed the point.
I liked it.
It's a horror movie. Why is it an action movie now?
Camp Fest is what it is.
Snow White was lucky not to be punched.
I forgot for that existed.
Many reasons, but I ultimately have to punch Avatar: Fire and Ash.
Oh, really?
Wow.
It's not the worst movie I've seen this year. Mm. It's still visually stunning.
Yeah.
All of the Avatar things. Mm. But what... I understand for you, James Cameron, why you have to believe we care about what happens in this movie. But whereas that was like an acceptable, like, okay, fine, we'll pretend we know who the Sullys are in The Way of Water. In this one, where there's an hour and a half of like spiders learning to breathe and...
I don't care about Spider.
And the second, the young Sigourney Weaver that I don't even remember why you are and who and the thing. And
she was a miracle pregnancy in Sigourney Weaver's corpse, I think.
What?
Yeah.
And she's tapping in, but it might hurt her. And it's I'm here to look at pretty shit. Like, fine. Give the story and have the mythology in your head. Remember, I'm here to look at pretty shit and don't bog down with all of this exposition. And by the way, you hung the whole first 2 hours of this 3 hour, 15 minute movie mostly on the spider character. Mm. And then because you apparently realized you don't have a big climactic ending with young small guy learns to breathe. Oh my God. You were like, let's do the ending from the first one again. They have to save the whales a second time.
Wow.
What?
Ending from the second one again.
Right? The ending from the second one again. It's just, maybe it's because I read one of those longing profiles of Cameron where he's a douchebag. But in that profile, he's like, why aren't you talking to me more about Avatar, Fire, and Ash? And it's like, oh, you've gone over into truly believing your own bullshit.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. And have we talked about Avatar on the show?
No.
I don't think so.
Has everyone seen it?
I saw the first one.
I saw it.
You saw Fire and Ash?
Yeah.
This is the nobility of indigenous peoples movie, right? So why do the fire people have every... air quotes, name of trope, bad Indian stereotype from 50s Westerns.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Why are the bad guys literally scalping, whooping, and smoking peace pipes?
And wearing feather headdresses. Yeah. It's very, like, buddy.
Wow.
Yeah. Like...
real tone deaf.
Yeah, I'll put that aside when I'm watching The Searchers, and not a movie from 2025.
Also, it's not like, people have been criticizing him for this since 2009.
Yeah.
Like... he's had time to learn his lesson and improve his situation.
Oh, no, he just strikes me as someone you can't tell him shit.
Yeah.
No.
He discovered the Titanic. No one's going to tell him. Yeah, was very angry. Walked out of there very... my angriest this year has been walking out of... my angriest media this year, obviously. It's been walking out of Avatar, Fire, and Ash, and the creeping, growing anger of watching the last Stranger Things season. But That's for another podcast.
They're all so old.
It's so crazy to me. Like, I haven't gotten to the recent season yet because I don't remember shit from the... so I was rewatching it. But yeah, they're so old. Like, it's not cute anymore.
No.
Like, we should have just had the one season and that was it.
Hairlines are receding. Anyway, I'll let Robin go last because I believe Robin's top five is the most considered. Certainly more than mine because I'm so distracted this year. As is tradition, stealing more time, just to quickly tell you, 10 through 6 are. Ephus is number 10, the indie baseball movie, tragically underseen, especially for baseball people. One Battle is 9. Blue Moon is 8. I did really love Blue Moon. Sorry Baby is 7. Sorry Baby was... you know, when I watched 3 or 4 movies at the last minute before Pittsburgh Film Critics voting, Sorry Baby was the one that leapt onto a lot of my list.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a lot of this year's best movies are emotionally devastating. That one certainly is. But
But it also is it's a hug too. You get a hug out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the most like, here is this important new filmmaker that I want to see all the movies of, Eva Victor, who wrote, directed, and starred.
I will say it was a weird experience to be like, what do I know her from? Twitter. I wasn't ready for that.
And I have Marty Supreme at 6. That is my basic selection. I have Surratt at number 5 for the year. You have to have a dead part of your soul that you can access to continue watching things that are so upsetting.
It is so upsetting. I just want to like warn listeners, like, it might be good, but you don't want to watch it.
No, you probably don't. If you do, watch it for incredible filmmaking.
Yeah.
They're out in the middle of the desert, and the soundtrack is this, like, almost melodic techno stuff, and you can just feel the sand and the sweat, and you can smell these people through the screen.
Yeah, everything that comes before the title coming up, I was like, yes.
Right.
And then everything after the title coming up is a nightmare.
If you don't know what this is about, a father and his young son are going to like illegal desert raves in Morocco to try to track down his young adult daughter who's missing. And things get so much worse from there. But
God, I'm drawn to it, yet I'm also cautious.
There are movies set in space that feel less extraterrestrial than this does. It's just like going to a part of the earth we're not meant to be and seeing what happens. I can't say I loved it, but I can say I was gripped by it. Hamnet is number 4. It's just so beautiful. Again, everything this year, my entire top 5 are
emotionally devastating.
So is Hamnet, but it's so gorgeous. It's like this. Robin's going to talk about the production design of Secret Agent, I bet. This is my production design triumph, because it's like the collision of an artist's mind and this bleak, you know, Middle Ages. Is that the Middle Ages?
No.
Whenever it is, Shakespeare time, you know, dirty drabness that is just perfect in every, you know, the every frame of portrait thing absolutely applies. I think it's perfectly directed, and Jesse Buckley, it's hard to not say Michael B. Jordan is the performance of the year, but Jesse Buckley is right there. She just is carrying this whole movie on her back. The rest of the cast is good too, but it's like she's has a chokehold on the camera and is like, you will pay attention to me at all times because I'm doing so much. I loved that.
And she was she the one in Men a couple years ago?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
God.
Netflix's The Perfect Neighbor is number 3.
Now I excluded documentaries from mine, just so we're clear, because I saw too many that would have taken over. agreed.
I think this is the only time I've put a documentary in my top 10. Oh. And that's no dis. I don't see a lot. But the way this makes its argument silently.
Yeah.
I know that editing is a language, and I know that that's, you know, but every other documentary you've ever seen either has a narrator or has so many
talking heads
saying the things that the filmmaker wants to say. So to just use real footage for 95%, and even when a voice comes in, it's just a little afterward.
Yeah.
So to just use real footage for 95% of this, and I'm never going to conduct this experiment. I will bet that if you took the most opposed to this line of thinking citizen in America right now and convinced them to sit down and watch this, they couldn't disagree at the end. Right. It's just so perfectly done.
Yeah,
it's emotionally devastating. But
there's Sean's theme for
Your patience will be rewarded at the end. That's my spoiler-free reason to say, don't turn it off when you want to turn it off.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed. Like 100%. Yeah. That was definitely one of my favorite. I think that was one of 2 5 stars on Letterboxd of documentaries for me. Like the other one was the Diane Warren.
One, which I still need to watch.
A month ago, 6 weeks ago, I sat next to Robin at the movie theater, and as soon as Train Dreams ended, I said, I apologize for how much I'm about to overrate this. So Train Dreams is 2.
I still need to watch that.
It's good. I am very much in the, like, I don't understand people who are in love with Train Dreams, and yet I'm still like, good movie.
I already read the book. It's gorgeous.
It is very beautiful.
It's the most beautiful movie of the year in a year with a lot of beautiful movies. The way that it's shot, it's emotionally devastating. But there's something I really love about sad characters in beautiful places. And this is the ultimate sad character walking through gorgeous scenery movie. I love the cast. I'm turning around on
Joel Edgerton.
What's his name?
Joel Edgerton.
I haven't learned his name yet, but I'm turning around on him.
I am always will stand for him.
Yeah. I am the opposite of that. Which, I'm like this
I know you
guy.
Hate him. And this was also why I was trying to like stumble through the plague, but I couldn't.
No.
We'll put a pin in the plague.
Yeah.
When William H. Macy showed up in this, we were both like, is that William H. Macy? Because he's old now.
Yeah.
And he's not headlining things anymore. So it's just like, it feels like it's just a lot of.
What has he been up to?
I feel like anytime he is working, it's like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we weren't.
Well, there was trouble in the family.
That's right.
That probably took his attention for a while. Yeah. But no, I feel like I haven't seen him in a while. And he's so good in this. Felicity Jones and Carrie Condon like are brief, but they're both.
I loved Carrie Condon in that movie.
Carrie Condon's so good.
I really like her.
I also love a movie of little vignettes that add up to something. Mm-hmm. So this is a tough sit on Netflix because it's slow and quiet and mostly about you looking at trees. So put your phone in the other room, turn the lights off, do all of that. But I loved it, and it would be my number one movie of the year if. We weren't in the world with Sinners. We already had this conversation.
Tough break, guys. Tough break, Train Dreams.
It's Rob and I also saw Sinners with you, and at the end of that one, I said, I would watch it all again right now, and I would have.
That was my immediate thought, too, after I saw it.
It's we already talked about it. Yeah. Sinners. It's Sinners.
It's Sinners.
And
you know why.
The sound. That's not the... We've already talked about Michael B. Jordan, give him 2 Oscars. We've already talked about the story and the direction of the thing. The sound is so good. Yeah. And I don't just mean the music. I mean every sound this movie makes is perfect. Yes. It's so good. I don't even know what I want from Coogler anymore. Whatever he wants and everything. Because he's just... make him make a franchise, it'll be perfect. Let him do exactly what he wants, it'll be perfect.
Exactly.
It's just... Come on.
Carte blanche. That's all you, Ryan.
At the end of the episode, by the way, we have quizzes. You can play along at home. But before we get to Robin's list, most anticipated movies of 2026. This is a cheat because it was on my 2025 list and then got delayed. The Bride with Jesse Buckley.
Oh, wow. That got delayed?
Yeah. Maggie Gyllenhaal's.
Do you think it got delayed because of
Frankenstein?
Yeah.
And Dracula?
I think it's Warner Brothers, and I think they were strategic.
Oh, okay.
You know, that. Warner Brothers, for their numerous sins, had that incredible run this year and probably thought, like, okay, we have enough. Yeah. We don't want to compete with it. We're going to wait.
It would have been a nice companion piece. There's no competition.
Right? But it's early this year, right?
Yeah, it'll be out in the next few months.
Yeah.
Christian Bale's The Monster and Jesse Buckley is the Bride.
Fucking love it.
Perfect. The preview looks great. It's my favorite preview of this year.
I'm excited for it, too.
I love the thing that they do with the, like, ink blot.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, just so clever.
And I'm really pumped. I'm ready to be proven wrong. I'm really pumped for Supergirl. Mm-hmm. Because I had a good time with Superman, and I'm like, prove to me that we can expand this.
Is this part of that universe?
She showed up at the end of the Superman movie. Okay. I'm like, okay, I really enjoyed... Superman was in my honorable mentions. Mm. I really enjoyed that. Please prove to me that this is not a fluke and you can keep going. Camila?
I have a tie for my most anticipated for 2026. Scream 7.
Sure.
Obviously.
Legitimate.
Yeah, and it's like it comes out my birthday weekend. So it's my birthday movie this year.
That's really soon. Like that's going to be here before you know it.
I'm so stoked. I swear... I apologize now to anybody who's watching it with me. If Matthew Lillard comes on screen and at any point in Scream 7, the scream I would have scrumped when it happens, the shit is just going to be obnoxious. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Michael. the Michael Jackson biopic.
Mm. I don't think I knew that existed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of his nephews or somebody is playing Michael Jackson.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The asterisk is it's authorized and with the family. Okay. So it's not going to be an...
Yeah.
A
full portrait.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they're just more... from the trailers, it feels like they're just really focusing on performance and creation of his music.
It's... If you can check all that you know at the door, right. If you can pluck that out of your brain and leave it in a little umbrella stand at the theater.
Which I do all the time. Sure. Let's be real.
Sure. Right. You're going to watch Michael Jackson become Michael Jackson, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So much is going to come down to that performance.
Right. I know. And I think that he's got it. I think that he's going to be able to do it. His facial features, not so much. That's a little like, ugh. But and I don't know if there's like a bunch of prosthetics involved in Michael's early or later years of what this child
he had
like.
A lot of different faces.
Yeah, I know. I'm not familiar with whose child this is, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be a good time. Hopefully, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I remember your most anticipated film for this year was Saw 11. Mm-hmm. May not even exist.
I know.
Mine was just delayed.
It's like, mine is just like often it's now sawdust.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Robin?
Okay. So I want to say that my most anticipated movie is Charlie XCX's companion album for Emerald Fennell's Wuthering Heights. Not the movie. I am interested in that movie, but the discourse around it is going to be so disgusting because she is a lightning rod for misogyny. Mm. And I'm sure you, listener, hate her for good and noble reasons, I'm sure.
I'm super pumped for Wuthering Heights.
I want to see Wuthering Heights, but...
I'm, like, really excited about it, too, and I've never read the book. I'm about ready to read the book before I go watch this movie.
Audiobook. I'm like, it's not going to... It's like six weeks. It's not going to happen on paper, but I will listen to the audiobook.
Also, there's a really good old version of the movie with Laurence Olivier. Anyway... I can't say that I'm most anticipating that movie because I know how gross people are going to be about it. So, my truth is, Dune.
I don't understand.
Oh, Thrune is coming out this year.
Yes.
I don't think I knew that was a definite.
Well, here's the thing. It is scheduled for the same day as Avengers Doomsday, and so one of them is going to blink.
Doomsday.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see. But, yeah, listen, I just love the Dune movies.
Wow.
I walked into that first one expecting to hate it. And I just love them.
I love looking at them.
Yeah.
I haven't rewatched any Dune movies.
I've rewatched them both so many times. Huh. So yeah, that's what I'm looking most forward to.
Well,
can you do like a Cliff's Notes as to this discourse?
Why like, I like Dune?
No, Wuthering Heights. Like, sorry. Oh. Let's back to Wuthering Heights. What is the discourse and what is
so
what?
People hate her.
Who's her?
Emerald Fennell.
Okay.
Or Fennell.
Who did Promising Young Woman.
And Saltburn.
Saltburn. I was about to say sawdust. That's just a word you said recently. Saltburn.
So part of the reason they hate her is that she's rich. Like she grew up rich. Mm. Okay. Part of the reason they hate her is they think those two movies are bad. I mean, Saltburn kind of is bad.
Yeah. Promising Young Woman, though.
A lot of people thought that that movie was like a crime. People... disliked it for being not feminist enough. People disliked it for being too feminist. Like a lot of people hated that movie. So anyway, people just hate her. And
the internet was a bad idea. Go on.
Freaking weird. It's like Wuthering Heights looks so weird is the other thing.
That's why I'm interested.
That's exactly why I'm interested. And also Charlie XCX reasons. But like, I think that because her last weird movie kind of didn't work, people are like, oh, she's going to be even more weird. It's going to work even less. Right? Like the whole vibe of Wuthering Heights looks like the one curtain scene in Saltburn.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm pumped.
I'm here for it.
All right. Glad I'm not the only one.
No. Let's all go. Let's make plans.
Yeah, okay.
Robin, and I didn't mean, Camila, I didn't mean to shade your top five when I said Robin's was the most considered.
I know.
I'm checked out, and I know she watched more movies than you. That's really what I meant.
Absolutely,
Okay, so number five, Hamnet.
Good.
Ordering these five movies was a crisis. Like, I knew my one and two. Three through five, I was a crisis for
Is
me.
This going five now?
Yes, or, so I'm starting at five. Okay. Five, Hamnet. And everything Sean said, like, I think beautiful is the best word to describe this movie. But I just also wanted to acknowledge, like, you know, this year I passed the 20th anniversary of my parents' deaths. Oh, and so I was definitely, like, thinking more about grief than I normally do. And I normally think about grief quite a bit. Mm. I think Hamnet does a beautiful job of forcing you to confront grief. Mm-hmm. Like it is like the worst kind of grief, right? You know, it's like losing a child is like not supposed to happen.
Right.
And I think that it is remarkable that this movie is like, yep, you're going to feel things, deal with it. And then the third act was this incredible transcendent experience because, you know, you watch Jesse Buckley's character, I can't remember how she pronounces her name. Anya's?
Anne Hathaway.
You know, she experiences this catharsis through art. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm experiencing a catharsis through art. You know what I mean? So it's like, it just resonated so much with me. So great movie. But like Sean said, when we first talked about it, like if you think that you're not going to like it, you are correct.
Sure.
Yes. Or if it is too painful for you to confront grief that much, that, you know what? That's okay. All right. Number four. This is, I said, shockingly low. Sinners.
Mm.
the judgment in that single noise.
I mean, it's legitimate. It's valid. Like I said, I do think Sinners is the movie that will have the longest legs, right, for right. sure, without a doubt.
It's okay. It's on your list.
Yes.
that's all that matters.
And I think that The only reason it's in four as opposed to higher is that it's just not my kind of movie,
yeah,
right? That's fair. It's a horror movie, and yeah. I'm just not a horror movie person. But God, what a fucking great film. And especially I wanted to call out the coda is still the thing that made that movie go from, oh, this is a great movie, to, oh my God, this is a great movie.
Right.
Yeah. Number three, One Battle After Another. Make another judgmental noise.
They were different. They were distinct, and they carried different meaning.
Mm-hmm. And again, listen to Camila. Like, right. She has an extremely valid opinion on this movie, and I am able to enjoy it through white privilege. Mm-hmm. But, God, I enjoyed it so much. And, like, I've watched it three times, and it's been out for, what, 3 months?
Yeah.
So, wow, like, you've sat through this movie three times.
I love it. I love this movie. I wanted to say, like, you know, there was this annoying discourse again about Avatar having no cultural impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, One Battle After Another is cultural impact, the movie, mm-hmm. right? Like, Tiana Taylor with the machine gun, iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Leo on the phone, iconic, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, that doesn't just happen,
sure.
is the thing. Like, that illustrates quality filmmaking.
If my list were best times in the theater, it'd be number two behind Sinners,
yeah.
because it is a fantastic strap in for this ride.
You know? Strap in for this ride. And like Marty Supreme, you briefly mentioned, I thought that was going to be in your top five, having read your review. I think that what people are responding to in that movie is strap in.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's Uncut Gems too.
Yes, exactly. And for me, like you said, it's Uncut Gems too. For me, I strapped in and was like, no! But One Battle After Another, you're strapped in and you're like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, love that movie while acknowledging its flaws.
Sure.
Number two, The Secret Agent. Which I saw your 3.5-star review.
I didn't love it.
Why didn't? Is it because of the weirdness of it? Like the structure?
I mean, if you want brutal honesty, I didn't love it because I was too sleepy. Like I was really tired that day and I was out in the middle of the afternoon. And because of that mostly, but also I think because of the structure, it never grabbed me.
Yeah.
It never like grabbed me by the throat and said, pay attention to this story. And it was just a little too, here's these characters, and didn't let me.
But one of those characters was Donna Sebastiana.
Yeah. No, everyone in it was great. I absolutely agree with you about the production design, the costume, the design period. It just didn't do it for me on that day. I bet on a different day I would have liked it more.
Okay. So yeah, obviously the production design is my favorite thing about the movie. It is just transporting to a time and a place, 1977 Brazil. But I think the reason the movie resonated with me so much is because it's about living under fascism, which we are all doing. And specifically, I think that the movie really captures like the everyday indignity mm-hmm. of it, like that restaurant scene. Like it's the worst people on earth are acting like they are better than us
yeah.
right now. And mm-hmm. that just sucks. That feeling is horrible.
Yeah.
And this movie captures that feeling so beautifully. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the actual awful consequences of fascism come into play, right?
Right.
You know, it's like the thing that most of us are going to have to deal with over the next however many years is the indignity. Mm-hmm. But this movie also shows there's no way out of the worse consequences of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Just any normal guy can end up where he ends up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's certainly something to see. My like tepid, it's a very good movie, but regardless of my opinion of it, this is a great thing to look at for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's a claymation sequence. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, it's not that it was weird. I loved the shark in the leg.
Yeah.
That was great. But
anyway,
Udo Kier's last performance. Mm-hmm.
And also, and he's good.
That scene's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I legitimately don't know what your number one is.
Blue Moon.
Wow.
Yes.
I knew you loved it.
Yeah. So this is, you know, we're doing, I don't know, are we saying these are the best movies of the year or these are our favorite movies of the year?
Yeah.
Because Blue Moon is my favorite movie of the year. And like, it is going to be a comfort watch for me for the rest of my life.
Nice.
It just hit me at the exact right time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Lorenz Hart this year. I feel like, what have I been doing with my fucking life? and you know, they tell you in the beginning he's about to die, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to have a comeback, and hopefully I will. But, like, all of these people, even when they are deeply, deeply pitying him, respect him.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is very comforting. And Ethan Hawke, I mean, come on.
He's great. Margaret Qualley's great.
Yeah. Bobby Cannavale, Union City Zone.
Oh, love him.
Yeah.
Another movie, like some of the ones we were talking about, like Ephus and like him, where it's like, no, more people should see these movies.
Yeah.
It's none of, well, nobody saw Ephus, but him and Blue Moon, some people saw. But like, these are movies that a lot of people would enjoy.
Or wouldn't even know exist, frankly, is the thing. Yeah.
Do you have honorable mentions to throw in? Because I named a whole 13 or 14.
You know I still love Highest to Lowest. Yeah. I wanted there to be room for Highest to Lowest in my top five, but there just wasn't. This was a really good movie year.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
I thought Sentimental Value would be on yours.
You know what? Sentimental Value, it came and it went.
It was in my honorable mentions. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I never was like, this is a 10 out of 10. This is a solid 9 out of 10. The cast is great.
It's well written, but it has not stuck with me all that much.
I think Elle Fanning's a little overhyped in this.
She's really good in Predator Badlands.
I still haven't watched Predator Badlands.
You should.
Maybe
you'll
love
it.
Maybe that's what I'll do. There's a lot that I haven't seen that I should have. I've just been busy. But I still saw a lot of movies and a lot of movies that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
So Sinners wins. Yeah.
One and four,
yeah. I think. We didn't even, I re-listened
to
the last
one. It's 1-1 and it's a shamed four.
Yeah.
It's like, I shouldn't be putting this here, but I am.
Is that the only one that we overlap on?
Sean and I both have Hamnet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But last year, there was nothing that was on all three.
No.
So, a clear win for Sinners. I hope it comes back to theaters. I've already missed it coming back to theaters twice. So, I'm hoping after the Oscar nominations, it is back again, and I will gladly go again.
Yeah.
Yes. Before we go, Robin and I both have quizzes for the group. Play along at home. Here's mine. I have 5 questions. We'll see who does better. I'm going to give you 2 options, and one of them is an actual movie that came out this year.
Oh my God, I love this quiz already.
And one is the nickname of a wrestler I introduced at the last Enjoy Wrestling show.
I love this quiz.
All wrestlers, but especially indie wrestlers, all have a little nickname before their. My friend Brandon St. James, you say Satan's favorite saint, Brandon St. James.
Interesting.
There's a moniker is what they say. So I have 5 monikers and 5 movies that were in the top 200 highest grossing movies between 100 and 200.
So they even have to be real movies. Like,
they came out in theaters and people bought tickets for them. Not very many, but
got it.
That happened.
Okay.
Your first question. One of these is a movie. One is a wrestler's moniker. Dead of Winter or Intrepid Traveler?
I'm going to say Dead of Winter is a real movie.
Yeah.
One is a movie, one is a wrestler.
Okay, so the Traveler is the wrestler and the other one's the movie.
So far, you are both correct. One Woo! Point each. Yeah. The intrepid traveler Paul London was on the first indie show I ever saw at 18 years old, and I just got to introduce him in December for Enjoy. Dead of Winter is an action thriller starring Emma Thompson.
What?
In the snow.
I think I can see the photo of that. She's like wearing a little hat, a knit hat, and it's blue.
Yeah, she's going to scatter her husband's ashes, but things go haywire in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds great. Yep. Probably not, because we would have heard something about it.
Yeah. But one of these streaming services thinks that I want to watch it.
Okay.
1 point each. Next, Riff Raff or Long Island Firecracker?
Riff Raff is a movie.
I'm going to go with Long Island Firecracker is a movie.
Camila pulls ahead.
Okay.
2-1. The Long Island Firecracker, Avery Jacks, up and comer. I've met twice now. Riff Raff is a crime comedy film starring Jennifer Coolidge, Ed Harris, Gabrielle Union, and Bill Murray and Pete Davidson. Mm.
I think that I've also been... Hey, you want to watch this?
the things go weird at a vacation, an ex-criminal's vacation home. A real thing that happened. It's listed as a 2024 movie, but it came out in February of this year. Camila's up 2-1. Next, Metahuman or Game Changer?
Game Changer's a movie.
Same.
A point for both of you.
Yes.
Game Changer was an Indian film that made a little bit of money this year. It was actually a gigantic bomb because they poured a ton of money into it, and it didn't even make that much money in India. But it was in theaters for a while. Camila leads 3-2. That's it. Detective Chinatown 1900 or The Concrete Rose?
Detective is a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have cut out the 1900. Detective Chinatown could be a wrestler. The 1900 throws it off. That's a Chinese comedy mystery. Chow Yun-fat makes a special appearance.
Chow. Yeah, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
I know, right?
Camila is perfect so far. Robin, almost. And no, finally...
Camila means perfect.
What'd I say?
No, I'm sorry. You said Camila is perfect so far. My name actually means
that's
perfect.
That's awesome.
I didn't know that. Supersonic or Stitchhead?
Supersonic is the wrestler.
I'm going to go Supersonic's the movie.
Stitchhead is the movie.
Oh,
Camila,
man.
With the perfect run.
It means perfect.
Supersonic Mikey Montgomery, your Enjoy champion. As of this recording, Stitchhead is a German animated monster fantasy comedy film. There's a guy, little kid with like a stitch patch on his head. That's all I've figured out about
it.
All real movies that happened this year. Dead of Winter sounds fascinating.
I want to watch Dead of Winter.
Probably. Where's the reception? 77% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's not bad.
A chilly thriller that wears one too many layers of backstory, but still satisfies as a tense showcase for its estimable star, says the Rotten Tomatoes consensus.
Oh, man.
Robin?
So my quiz is, was it a Nomia?
Oh, it was a weird year. There were a lot of like ones that snuck in for 1 week.
Yes,
and
yes.
Things you thought would be Nomias that weren't.
Sean obviously has a slight advantage here because he keeps up our spreadsheet, but he's also, as he said, been distracted this year. Right. So I don't trust him to remember everything. All right. First, was One Battle After Another a Nomia?
Hmm.
Yes.
I think, yes, I think it didn't make as much as the most optimistic predictions, but I think it still won its opening weekend.
Correct. It won its opening weekend. The only other wide release that weekend was Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie.
Okay.
And it just made $22 million, which is a light. But yes, it is a Nomia. It is on our list. All right. Next, Drop.
No.
It is not. It lost to the Minecraft movie, the second week of the Minecraft movie. All right, next. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning.
Yes.
I think I'm wrong, but still say yes.
No. Uh-huh. Lost to Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, that was around the same time.
All right. Den of Thieves 2, Pantera.
That was, and I'm angry about it.
It was the first 2025 movie to become a Nomia.
Uh-huh.
All right. K-pop Demon Hunters.
Yes.
Unknown because Netflix doesn't report grosses, but probably.
Yes, is the answer, right. It is an estimate of $18 million, so that there were no other new releases that week. This was a late August weekend with, like, I think the other thing that came out that weekend was Honey Don't.
Yeah.
So, like, Netflix doesn't report grosses, but people figured out how, you know.
Sure.
A lot of I tried to get a ticket to one of those shows and was all sold out. Yeah. And so, All right. The Accountant Squared.
No. Another movie I hated. I say no.
No, it lost to Sinners.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, the movie Infinity Castle.
Yeah, I had to type all of those letters into the spreadsheet, so that's a yes.
That is correct. What? What is it?
It's a popular anime, and this has happened a couple times now. If a popular anime comes out on a weekend without competition, it'll make $15-ish million and win the weekend.
Okay, but do you know how much money this movie made?
How much?
$70 million.
Huh. Anime's bigger than we think.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that total or that weekend?
That weekend.
Wow.
Damn.
I mean, now I feel like I have to double check that, but like, yeah.
Good for theaters.
Right. Okay. 28 years later.
I don't think
No, lost to How to Train Your Dragon. The Naked Gun.
How to Train Your Dragon live action happened this year. Anyone have any recollection or feelings?
I literally just watched it.
What did you think?
It's fine. Yeah,
The Naked Gun, I think no.
Yes.
It's a no. It lost to the second week of The Fantastic Four First Steps.
Really?
Yes, yeah, which was not, people were not expecting that.
A thing that frustrates me about the modern box office is comedies especially, people go, oh, I can wait until that gets home. It's not a Marvel movie. It's not a Mission Impossible. Comedies are more important to see with other people laughing around you. It is more important that you see Naked Gun in the theater than Fantastic Four in the theater. Absolutely.
Really?
Oh, I mean, you need the, what am I trying to say?
You need the shared experience.
The shared experience.
See, my it's thing like is a laugh always, track on a sitcom, right?
Yeah. My thing has always been, I don't need to see a comedy in the theater. I would much rather see the action or the horror.
Horror, I agree with, but you know, the more people around you are laughing, the more you're laughing.
I'm going to say
you guys are comedians.
Yeah.
Reluctantly. Demon Slayer is the 18th top grossing movie of the year.
Yeah.
Made $134 million.
There you go. Thank you for looking that up.
Yeah. How about that?
And finally, Tron Ares.
Yes, because nothing else came out?
No.
Yes.
Ugh.
And Roofman came out.
Oh.
Yes, and After the Hunt. In another life where movies went to, or movies for grown-ups, people went to see them. It wouldn't have happened, but it did. And I'm going to punch it.
It's such a weird box office year. I mean, a Minecraft movie went to number one for the year. Fine. It was a lot of fun.
I believe the children are our future.
The kids loved it, and the kids had great theatrical experiences. Lilo and Stitch went to number two. I don't feel like anybody really was talking about the Lilo and Stitch.
No, not in a positive way. Like, I know there's a lot of people like all grumpy about some choices.
Superman is number three, fine. The Jurassic World, which I kind of liked, but it felt like it flew right out of everybody's brain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wicked is five. I feel like Wicked should be higher. I mean, it might climb a little bit.
Yeah.
Zootopia 2 was six. Sinners was seventh. Fantastic Four was eighth. And I thought that the whole thing about that is that nobody went.
Mm.
But I guess people did. How to Train Your Dragon was ninth. And Avatar is 10th, which is weird for an Avatar. Avatar still has some money to make. It'll get higher than 10th, but not a lot higher.
Yeah, I finally watched Fantastic Four, and I was unimpressed.
Yeah, it's pretty boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
it makes me sad how often Pedro has disappointed me this year.
He spread himself too thin.
He did.
Yeah.
That 30 seconds of Steve Rogers holding a baby got me more hyped for more Marvel than Fantastic Four did. So.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
We've kind of painted ourselves into a corner tone-wise here.
That list of 10 movies, underwhelming. Our list of 12 movies that make our top fives, extremely whelming. You should watch those great movies.
Absolutely.
And we didn't even mention things that some of us, to all of us, really enjoyed this year, like Weapons, like Final Destination, Bloodlines, our favorite episode of the year. Go back and listen to that. We liked Black Phone 2 a lot. I think Elio is underrated, 28 years later. Naked Gun was really good. Yeah. You can watch Regretting You if you want to have a date night. Mickey 17 was pretty good. That was in my honorable mentions.
I still have to watch that.
Osgood Perkins had two movies. Keeper was better. The Monkey made more money. The Running Man, it sure did happen.
No.
Hey, next time, guess what? It's our 200th episode.
Woohoo!
Good job, us.
Yay! Yay!
We have resisted the urge to go. I'm busy for 200 whole episodes.
Like, this is the only appointment that I've managed to keep every single time.
Good for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because we like doing it. Yes. We like hanging out and talking about the movies. So, Robin, first say why you chose it in the first place and now what that choice has become.
Okay. Well, the title of half of our show is You Can't Handle the Truth. That's also the predecessor podcast for this show.
Right.
I believe it was the 200th episode of You Can't Handle the Truth, which was the backdoor pilot for Nomia.
I think that's right.
Yes. Yeah. Go back and listen to that. So Sean's never seen A Few Good Men. And it turns out Camila hasn't either, which was a surprise. You said you don't know you're going to watch it and be like, oh yeah, or not.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be one of those. Like I have so many
of those movies.
You see so many clips and GIFs and you know, references and, you know, parodies and you're like, oh, I must have seen this movie.
Exactly.
But when Aaron Clymer and I first started that podcast, we were going back and forth. I think the pilot was called After the Credits.
Mm. Okay.
And then we found out there was another podcast with that name because no one had Googled it. So then we were going around and I wanted to call it Popcorn for Dinner, which was the name of my
column
review blog for Pittsburgh Magazine for the past several years. And I did the opposite thing. I didn't Google it, but I assumed there had to already be something with that name. There wasn't.
Oh, wow.
So then we were just throwing out movie quotes, and eventually somebody said, "You Can't Handle the Truth." I had to be Aaron because I've never seen that movie. And I was like, well, yeah, that sounds we're being honest. We're giving our honest hot takes. You can't handle the truth about these movies. Yeah. And I mentally said, I should really watch A Few Good Men. And then enough time passed where it felt weird. So I just never
did. So I am saying weird schmeared. You got to watch it.
Right.
It's also a genuinely great movie. I made this selection before Rob Reiner and his wife were murdered.
Yeah.
And close. It was like a week.
And there's like, proof in one of these episodes.
Right. I had to edit in an explainer because Sean reacted so like, ugh. And I was like, he's not reacting that way because I'm being gauche by picking a recently killed person's movie. But honestly, like, I messaged Sean and Camila when that news came out. I was like, should we pivot? Like, is this? But honestly, I do think it will be nice to talk about his work, especially because he was a great director.
Considering when you picked the movie, I didn't realize that it was a Rob Reiner movie, and it wasn't until his death and they were like showing, I was like, oh
yeah,
this is going to be a way. This is going to, we'll figure out what tone we're going to take. But we know it's not going to be a downer.
No. And it's, save it for the pod a little bit, but I think I also intellectually didn't go, oh, that Rob Reiner movie, A Few Good Men. And now that we're looking back, it is remarkable that you're like, okay, what are his biggest movies? Mm. A fantasy epic, a courtroom drama, a rom-com, a horror movie, and inventing the mockumentary comedy.
Right.
Like, how many directors have no genre?
Right.
And just go, now I'm going to do one of these and now one
and
of these.
And do them all so well,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm very glad that we're going to do that. And if you're one of our Pittsburgh listeners, the newly reopened Hollywood Theater, Row House Hollywood, is showing Rob Reiner movies, I think, all the way through February.
Oh, wow.
But they're showing this. They're showing When Harry Met Sally, American President, both Spinal Taps. So highly recommend that. And they're showing them at their second screen, which is like a like a basement screening room. And so it's just like...
They have two screens now?
They have a basement screening room that's maybe like a 50-seater, and it's very, very like cozy and intimate.
Wow.
And it's real warm down there. This is the only warm movie theater in Pittsburgh. Love the rest that. Are all cold.
The new waterfront has heated seats in some of the theaters.
Yes. Shut the front door.
I know.
So if you're,
but I accidentally turned it on and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, if you bump it, you're like, what?
I know, right?
Did I pee a little? No, it's the chair. It's the chair. If you're in Pittsburgh, go see that or any of the Rob Reiner movies at Row House. But join us to talk about this one and a remarkable career. Tragic end, but at least it's... I think it's elevated the way people talk about him as a director.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not to be like the tragedy was worth it, but like, it's, I'm glad that we're having this moment of evaluating him, which is a great look forward. And oh, here's what I did. Here's what I did last time. What was the number one song of 2025?
Fake Jesus song.
Billboard at the end of the year. Ranks the best performing singles of the year in its weird way.
So this isn't necessarily, like, it might not be that had the most weeks at one.
Collectively on each single's weekly physical and digital sales, as well as airplay and streaming. One of the 100 most successful songs throughout that year on the Hot 100 chart based on that information.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say Ordinary is the name of the song.
What is that? Ooh, that,
It's just a guy kind of singing about how he likes his relationship.
And Bruno it Mars? Sounds like Jesus song.
Okay. My guess is Bruno and the Lady Gaga song.
Ordinary is number 7. Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars' Die With a Smile is number 1.
Oh, good job.
Oh, yeah. Spotify has been really like pushing that in my face.
I think it is a genuinely beautiful song.
I still haven't listened to it.
Also, I love that Lady Gaga sings the low part.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Can't believe that Chapel Roan peaks at number 10 with Pink Pony Club.
God, I don't know.
What is the Pink Pony Club?
What?
I can't, what is the Pink Pony Club?
It's a place where she dances.
Okay.
On the stage.
But I keep seeing like bumper stickers and like I'm part of the Pink Pony whatever.
It's a way for people to say I'm queer and fabulous.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I thought if we lived in a better society, and that phrase isn't trademarked, it is. Mm. Someone should start like a nationwide network of Pink Pony clubs that function like fire halls or moose lodges for queer people.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a better world?
That would be, oh my God.
And I would try to get an ally pass because where else would you rather be than the Pink Pony Club?
I know, right? You know the music is banging.
Yeah.